SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website as well, stevebick.com. We're going to have a bit of a marathon session, actually not dissimilar from Friday, right? Friday, did we take a break? No, I don't think we took a break Friday, but of course we were on the doorstep of the weekend and had the parade of visitors live. Here we're going to do it on the phone, and the explanation, the backstory. Casey back in the hospital overnight and in intensive care. It's been such a difficult situation, and Jolan, who had been planning to be with us this morning to work the board, she's with him, and they're trying to get him. He's got to be transferred, actually, to back to where he, his primary. He's been at West Boca for the most part, and so Ray, who's been learning how to spin the dials on this particular board, is helping us today. And so we'll just stay straight through and won't take any breaks. We'll just keep bringing on visitors. And that includes a couple of the trainer successes from the weekend in New York and elsewhere. And we're going to talk to Maya, Jeremiah Engelhart, in a little bit here. First, the first time starter, I thought, he got a little bit of a connection because we're very friendly with Al Gold, and I'm anxious to talk to Maya about Marianne or Ginger. And Al has so much fun. He loves the game and loves being around it. And things, this goes back to Thursday in the Astoria and the two-year-old filly, and Mike Beer, who had a terrific series of ideas and opinions in the 4 days, 3 days, I guess Sunday too. You got to count Sunday. I really haven't mentioned other than in passing yesterday, Break Even's win in the Jersey Girl. It was kind of a workmanlike effort, but obviously she's, like her stablemate Kafefi, going to be a major factor as we head to the summer 3-year-old sprint series, New York Victory Ride and the test. But starting a firster, in a stakes setting, I mean, that says a little something. And that was what Mike Beer was focused on, knowing, that Jeremiah has got a very strong record, increasingly strong record with, first-time starters. And so, putting one in that setting, that was a high recommendation about the potential and the quality of Marianne or Ginger. And it played out. Of course, didn't have the greatest start out of the gate either. I mean, and then to come back and rally that way, 5.5 furlongs. So looking forward to talking to Maya about Marianne or Ginger and a few other. He's got a nice hand coming into the summer. So we'll talk to Jeremiah and later Vicky Foley. Vicky, of course, having to sweat out the inquiry, and getting the all clear for Hockery Cussell. And she'll tell you, she'll tell you straight out that she thought she was coming down. She thought that Hot Creek was going to get disqualified. And, you know, one of the nice things was that John Velasquez, who had been riding, who was he? On mine, that was Mind Control, right? Yeah, Mind Control. And Velasquez told the stewards that he was out of horse by the time Lannery came past and started to, you know, move toward the inside from the middle of the track. So, I mean, Mind Control, it was only going to be moved up at that point. What would that have benefited? So, kind of an interesting sidebar. Mind Control ended up eighth. So, you know, and there is actually a story to tell. We'll talk to Andy at 10 o'clock. There's a story to tell, I imagine, about Mind Control taking the blinkers off in here and not starting into the race the way he has when he's been successful. And he did have, a clunky start banging into the gate and that contributed, obviously. But, you wonder, too, if you got the blinkers, how much does that contribute to the potentially better start? There was so much going on in that Woody Stevens. The more you watch it, the more interesting it is. But I want to talk to Vicki Foley about her career, her long career. And this is one of those victories that gets widely celebrated and applauded. Because of her long, the long run that she's had and how widely respected she is. So, Maya and Vicki Foley, and expecting Neil Howard to talk about the Rich Woodbine Oaks win. Happy for Neil. That's a nice win. And you know, it's hard when you win the Woodbine Oaks, the hard not to look straight to the Queen's Plate. There's just been too many successful transfers from Woodbine Oaks to onto the Queen's Plate. So we'll see what Neil's going to do on that front with Desert Ride, the Candy Ride Philly. So going to talk today. Also, we got to look ahead to tomorrow and the OBS June sale as the 2-year-old and training sale season draws to a close. Last week, they ran through them at Santa Anita, and this one, a big one, too. I mean, obviously, multi-day, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at OBS. And then things will turn toward the yearling season again. I mean, it's like a carousel. It goes from one, swings from one to another. Probably Tom Ventura later this morning as inspections continue down at OBS. And I hope it, I'll check and see that it isn't oppressively hot. I know that further down in South Florida, it's been oppressive, but let's see. Maybe they're getting away with it a little bit in Ocala for inspections. Yeah, it's in the 80s. It's 86, 87, it looks like, through this afternoon. As everybody hits the parade, hits the the two-year-olds. Fill up the barns for the summer with the two-year-olds. All right. A couple of news and notes before we reach out to Jeremiah and we'll start with the KHRC and they're trying to, I suppose, not cajole, implore. There you go, implore the court to just dismiss the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Kentucky to dismiss the Gary West lawsuit. So we'll let that. See how that plays out and how quickly, discussing the intricacies of the laws that are involved here, it seems like a bit of a futile scenario. In this vein as well, as we discussed yesterday with John Sadler, about the situation at Santa Anita and the Stronach Group in association with the TOC and the CTT, the owners and the trainers groups, responded publicly that they are going to finish the meet and with the end of the meet. We understand that the Breeders' Cup will also be meeting to discuss and determine their course of action for the fall. And it's a very this is a difficult situation, because all, of course, you're able to do is speculate about the fall, but understanding the environment, it seems very, I don't want to say foolhardy, but it sure feels like a precarious situation if you choose to stay and I know all the reasons why that you'd want to stay and run the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita this fall, but it not knowing what you're going to encounter in September and October is the issue. It just feels prudent to make a move in advance, and obviously Churchill is ready and willing to serve as host, and it just seems to be logical. I mean, those of you that heard the Monday show today, you had to hear the tone and the inference by Steve Asmussen. I thought that was a very strong indication of what a major outfit in the sport would like to see happen. Quite ready to to go out to California if that's the decision. But you could really tell, I thought yesterday, that Steve Asmussen was strongly suggesting a move. So we got a couple of weeks to play out the the string at what has just been an impossibly difficult winter and spring in Arcadia. And I mean, the most recent series of incidents are the most outlandish sequence of just bad luck that you could possibly incur. I mean, the infrequent injuries of shoulders and pelvic. I mean, to have three of those incidents is just unusual. And you know, then the cardiac. We've discussed cardiac issues a million times with Dr. Allday. You know, they're very hard to. You know, people can do all kinds of tests and checks, and it's not easy at all. There's a wonderful, in fact, just thinking about equine cardiac issue. Dan wrote a piece. I'm going to guess in January or February, might even been earlier, might have been before the calendar turned, but I'll find that. Cardiac something in horses, what we know and what we don't know. I've got it here probably in my health file. I'll find that. But again, you know, there was the one structural, you know, skeletal issue, but with Cochise, but these other four, that's just bad luck, bad timing, and it just makes things look that much worse, but it is exasperating. I can tell you that I mentioned yesterday that we sat where we were sitting. We had Patrick Piancone and Jim Cassidy right behind us, and you know, obviously, you've heard from Jim several times this winter and into the spring. And I mean, I don't want to say the resignation, but the toll that this has taken on everybody is pronounced, you know, to say the least. So there's your two of the really difficult stories from the last several months between Santa Anita and the Derby. The more pleasant stories, obviously, are the results on the racetrack, and that's what we're going to get back to. Andy Serling and Jay Privman today as well in the middle portion of the show. Just looking forward to getting their takes. Andy and I talked a little bit yesterday, and Andy, you know, he was talking about the Gold Rail, and he thought it was as pronounced a Gold Rail as you're ever going to see. You know, and Andy's got a great race watching eye. So we'll get his thoughts, and we'll get his ideas about how to take advantage of what transpired. As I said yesterday, the motivation is bet backs. that's all that matters now. Is betting back, and if you got beat, let's figure out a way to get that money back, or make more if you already did well and want to do and want to take advantage of it going forward. That's what we're going to do. Jeremiah is going to join us next, and we'll talk about the baby. Neil Howard is going to join us as well in this first hour, and then, as I said, Jay and Andy, and Vicki Foley and more. Probably, probably get to Jeremy Plonk today. John White, too. We have to get John's take post Triple Crown season. And the Breeders' Cup question today, the first day of the, I don't know if they're going to release it today or maybe tomorrow, but they're going to release a Breeders' Cup Classic poll. And Jim Gluckson asked me to participate, so I did. And it actually was a fun exercise this morning, you know, to kind of go through. And not that this is a negative reflection on the 3-year-old crop, but I could not put a 3-year-old in the top 10 that I put together. All older horses for now, you know. Let's run some of these early summer races, and we'll go from there. Particularly, you know, the Foster, the first post, you know, Triple Crown season race for the elders, but, you know, Thunder Snow and McKenzie and, right? How do you argue with them? Mattoli, it's for the Breeders' Cup Classic. So, you know, Mattoli doesn't really, based on what you heard from Steve Asmussen yesterday, Mattoli, you know, wouldn't contribute here, but certainly Thunder Snow and McKenzie. And then, you know, the horses out of the Big Cap and the Hollywood Gold Cup, Vino Rosso, Gift Box, a couple of the Eastern horses, Catholic Boy, Quip, Gunavera, you know that he's going to show up. You Gunavera fans, you can't help yourself. You're going to bet him third. You know you are in the Breeders' Cup Classic. You're going to bet him third again, Gunavera, right? Lone Sailor also fits that profile. So we'll see. You know, Saturday night's going to be a lot of fun, and they'll draw that card tomorrow at Churchill Downs. Right now, we'll say good morning to Maya Engelhart, who sent out a first-time starter. Always a neat trick to win a stake with a first-time starter. Maya, congratulations to you and Al.
Thanks, Steve. That was a very fun afternoon.
You know, this is one of those things, and I know people think, this just is reflective of, you know, how few horses or whatever, you know, whatever thing argument you want to make. But it's really not. That's really not the case. And there's, you know, internationally there's maiden stakes, and you get firsters winning, and you know that kind of thing. This was a horse that obviously, it's easy to say after the result, but even going in, Mike Beer on when we were looking at the Thursday and Friday races on Wednesday, he made a big push for Marianne or Ginger. Talk about the decision to run her here, and you know how that came about to begin with.
Well, our original thought was to run her on the grass. I kind of thought that she would be a little bit better on the turf. My barn actually talked me out of it, and by that time I had already missed. We weren't really ready for the maiden special weight race on the dirt at Belmont at the time, and the new book wasn't out yet. And I'm like, well, we know she has talent. Let's set a target date for June 6th and see how, you know, she responds to that. By that time, the book will be out, and we can kind of make an adjustment if we want to. And she continued to train well, so we gave her a shot. And, you know, we weren't counting on drawing the rail, and we weren't counting on stumbling and getting shut off on the backside, but it worked out okay.
Well, and they, you know, they went quick. I mean, 5.5, though, you know, when you start like that and you got to think to yourself, ugh, this is over. I mean, two jumps out of the gate.
Yeah, I mean, my initial thought that went through my head was, well, at least I got an excuse to tell Al. You know, I could say, well, we stumbled, Al. We're never going to overcome that. You know, so that was my initial thought from that.
once, and I, actually, I want to, before we talk about the way the race unfolded, I thought it was also interesting that, you know, and you've been competing successfully down in the Mid-Atlantic through the winter, but you bring George Vargas to ride, and I thought that was actually kind of cool. I mean, he's obviously getting chances with you and doing very well. How much of the story, you know, of bringing Vargas in here is part of this?
Well, I knew I was going to have him in for a couple of days on the weekend. I was wanting him to ride dirty, and I was wanting him to ride Wendell Fong on Saturday. And I just figured, you know, why don't we plan on, I'm not sure who's going to be available or who would want to ride a maiden in the Astoria. And I've had, you know, Al really likes Georgie, and, you know, not that he doesn't like any, you know, a lot of other riders too, but it just, the chemistry was working at the time, and I'm a big believer in chemistry, and just thought that it would just work out right if we stuck to that plan. And that's kind of why we made the decision.
Well, it's certainly, certainly great for him too. And, to get this kind of a showcase, all she does is come flying late. And she also, you know, gave every indication that, you know, she's a filly that's going to stretch out nicely as well.
Yeah, I actually thought her gallop out was probably the most impressive part about her race, and believe it or not, like, you know, even Georgie said he had a hard time pulling her up. She made it all the way to the, almost to the top of the backstretch, which everyone knows there. That's a pretty big gallop out there. You know, one thing I want to say is I felt bad because I had Luis Saez actually worked her once before this race, and I had mixed up the schedule and was supposed to put him on another filly because I knew George was going to ride that filly for that race. And Luis ended up working Marianne or Ginger, and I didn't even realize it until the day of the race where, we'd talked and stuff. He's like, oh, that's a really nice filly. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, I worked her. I'm like, oh, boy. I'm sorry, Louie. You know, he goes, ah, don't worry about it. But I owe a couple other 2-year-olds later on to him and Richie because they were very, you know, gracious about it and very, you know, they were happy for us afterwards. So it, you know, worked out okay.
Absolutely. Circles the field, and you could tell, you know, it was already fairly deep stretch the way she was moving. And, you know, she's a strong mandate out of a Vindication mare. And in some ways, honestly, Maya, in some ways, it's a little bit surprising that she was ready to win at 5.5 at first asking.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, in her workout, she's had ability. I wanted to see something good, positive. You know, I wanted the race to be a good experience for her. I really wasn't. I knew she had ability. I wasn't expecting her to win, but I definitely thought, you know, down the road there'd be some better, you know, options for her stretching out, which she might, you know, want to do later on.
Well, and I suppose before we talk about what might lie ahead and about her background, you know, jumping condition like this and bypassing, you know, some of the options, given that she's a New York bred, or actually she's not a New York bred.
Correct. Yeah, I believe she's Kentucky bred.
I'm thinking of the one. Actually, the horse of there was a New York bred in one of the two. There was the Contessa on Friday that I think is a New York bred.
Is that the American? Does he have an American Pharaoh in on?
I think that was, this is the second time yesterday too. I couldn't, the name, the Italian American. Yeah. The Italian American.
Yeah.
Who's a Girolamo, that looks like I told Contessa later in the day, I said, how'd you let them, you know, run, how they let you run a four-year-old against two-year-olds. The thing looked like an elephant compared to the rest of them.
Yeah.
This horse, you know, for a strong mandate, talk about the purchase, $190,000.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, she was a filly that, you know, Travis Durr, who goes to a lot of the sales with me and helps, you know, pick out horses with myself, he owns and runs Webb Carroll's training center down in South Carolina. It was just a filly that kind of stuck out to us when we saw her. And, you know, I brought it up to Al, and, you know, he kind of, I always want to get his sign off on the pedigree. He puts a lot into the game, and he has certain things that he likes, and he really liked the filly. And she was a big, you know, an A plus for us as far as just to have the look. Of a real nice filly, you know, and then Strong Mandate got off to a little bit of a slow start. Seems like he's picking it up a little bit now, and hopefully that continues as she goes, you know, along in her career. But, you know, at the time we were really excited. We got her, you know, then we sent her down to Croupy's Newcastle and with Jimmy and Johnny down there. And they really liked her. She was working forward. Al had a couple other fillies down there that were working really well, and she seemed like she was might be the head of the group. So, you know, just the whole process of it was, you know, we're trying to find obviously real nice horses, and she kind of stuck out, and it worked out well in the first start. Hopefully it, you know, keeps continuing to work out well in her career.
Well, she's the third runner from this mare that makes it to the races, Time to Be Gone. And interestingly, she had a colt that didn't make it to the races, and now she's had five straight fillies. And Proud of My Honey was her first to make the races and was stakes placed in Puerto Rico. But certainly Mariana Ginger looks like she's going to exceed. There's also Gotta Go, 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 a Tisway. That's a three-year-old that's won actually a few times already. So nice family, it looks like, and every reason to keep stretching out. Saratoga, you know, obviously Maya dead ahead. What do you think? I mean, is she a Schuylerville candidate, I imagine?
I'm not 100% sure if I'd run her back into Schuylerville. I think I'd like to give her a little bit extra time. The one nice thing about Saratoga is you got three stakes up there for two-year-old fillies that, you know, with the Schuylerville, the Adirondack, and was Spinaway, you know, you have options as far as time goes. I think right now I would lean towards the Adirondack or maybe even just wait until the Spinaway, because in the paddock on Thursday, I thought she was a little light in comparison to the last time I had saw her. So I'm a little worried that race, you know, will take a lot out of her. So I kind of want to give her all the time that I think she needs, and, you know, kind of make a decision here towards the beginning of Saratoga.
Well, the one thing, this feels like a strike while the iron is hot family, because I'm just looking at the mare, Time to Be Gone. And she comes from a family of early winners, including, remember, Ice Cold Beer at Reds.
Yeah,
the Del Mar Futurity winner in 2002, and she was actually he was actually second in the Champagne that year as well. So, and the Time to Be Gone was the last of a handful. The mare had a bunch of babies and a number of stakes. So this is a winner, and certainly feels like with that start to her career, she's destined. Plus the clever name, the you know, I don't want to put her in the breeding shed yet for Al, but there'll be a parade of Gilligan's Island names for this one. I didn't even ask Al the other day what the motivation was for the Mariana Ginger name.
I just think that he was. I think he has a great knack for naming horses. You know, it was just, it's one of those questions, Mariana Ginger, you know, Wendell Fong from a phone call in the show Frasier. Like, it's just, he comes up with some really good ones. We got one that I can't wait to run this summer, Next Stop Poughkeepsie, because, you know, everyone's been on the train and they hear, Next Stop Poughkeepsie. You know, so you got to, there was, hey, it's Enrico Palazzo, with Larry Kalmus always tells us that's his favorite one. But it's a lot of fun when you know, he gets the name one, and he's got a really good sense of humor. So I always look forward to him, you know, and his naming abilities for the horses.
Well, Fixed Income Larry, a personal favorite for a friend of his, Fixed Income Larry. And then there's all the Hamish names, Avinu Malkenu and the sibling Good Shabbos that debuted just a couple of weeks ago, right?
She might be one that we might actually point towards, the Schuylerville. She came out of that race at Monmouth really well. I mean, she got beat a nose. She ran Dynamite. She didn't handle the ship as good as I thought she would that day. She got a little wound up in the paddock and pre-race activities. But she might be one that, you know, whether, you know, just depending on how the book plays out, you might take a shot with her in the Schuylerville and then wait for the Adirondack for Marianne or Ginger. But, yeah, you got My Italian Rabbi was another one that she broke her maiden as a New York bred first-time starter a few weeks ago. So he's definitely had some really good names. He comes up with some really good names.
Let's talk about Wendell Fong, actually, from Saturday. We'll go from the Astoria win on Thursday to the Woody Stevens. We're going to talk later to Vicky Foley. Wonderful story. I know, and in fact, I know from talking to Al before the race, well before the race, the way the racetrack was playing and the inside speed, particularly the rail, and, you know, concern about, you know, the where you had to be competitive, Maya. How much of that played into the full-out press that Wendell Fong engaged in? We talked yesterday to Cassie, and he absolutely admitted straight out that they went to the lead the way they did with Strike Summer. That, you know, that was completely because of the way the track, what they perceived as a track that, you know, forced your hand. What was your thoughts going in?
Mine was the exact same, and. You know, we were talking before the race early on in the day, well, we don't ever want to take a horse out of his running style. And then as it got closer to the race, both of us kind of just said, man, we got to go and we got to get to the rail and then just hope that we can either outbreak the field and get over, or we just find a spot we can get over and be as close as we can. Because at that time, it seemed like you had to be close. And you had to be, you know, use the rail at some point. And then I think what happened in that race is, knowing what you just said about Mark and knowing what I said, you get a couple horses that go out there and just duel. And, you know, maybe it wasn't as fast as the obviously the Met Mile, but those are older horses. These are three-year-olds going 7/8. You know, it just the right plan was what Steve did probably with Nitrous and what Vicky and her rider, you know, they kind of just let him come away from there, get to the inside. And then I think Vicky's horse was wide around the turn. Like he probably ran a real big race as far as, you know, in comparison. But I think a lot of that, the horses that were close in that race were going a little bit faster than they all, you know, the top five early on probably were going a little bit faster than they wanted to.
No doubt. And you know, the race has a, when you look at the chart, it has obviously a collapse scenario look to it, with horses that were, I think, 8th, 9th, and 10th early, finishing 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. However, you know, you can't be unhappy with the way that he hung in. I mean, to get the last check, he and Strike Silver. Strike Silver ends up 4th, and you guys were only beaten, what, a length and a half, 2.5 lengths.
Yeah, I think 2.5, 2.75 lengths. I was really happy with that race. I mean, not too often are you pleased with a fifth-place performance, but I think with what he did early on in the race, it kind of solidifies him as, you know, kind of what I thought he was. You know, he's going to be a horse that I haven't figured out the right distance for him yet. After the race, I actually thought that he would handle a one-turn mile probably better than a 6 furlong or, you know, 7 furlong race, just because of the way he ended up. He ended up like where you think at the top of the stretch, well, he's going to get swallowed at the back of the field closes in this race. He kept fighting on, and a lot of horses that you see run even like that, going 6 and 7 furlongs, and still are able to make up a little progress at the end, they'll stretch out, being able to relax early on in the race. And I kind of get that feeling that he will. The only other time I did that with him was when he ran against Always Mining, and I put the blinkers on, and that just wasn't the right move that day. So I still think we're going to see some of his best races are yet to come.
Well, awfully nice to be that close, and you know, grade one too, that part of it. And you know what you can do going forward into Saratoga, and where the goal would be. You mentioned Dirty before. Talk about that effort in the Jiper.
Yeah, Dirty just got a little too far back. As he's gotten older, he seems to like to settle a little bit more. And he just, you know, World of Trouble, how do you...
No.
Yeah. You know, you just tip your cap to him and the job that Jason and the owners and Manny have done with him. He's a solid. I mean, he's a sensational horse. He really is. To show the versatility that he's shown over his career, you just dust yourself off and you find the next spot that doesn't have a World of Trouble in it.
Yeah, it's quite impressive. And, you know, knowing that the turf course was certainly playing kind to the, you know, the front end horses. Not that, you know, again, not that you couldn't rally and there was no, you know, there just was not going to be any getting to him, basically. I mean, that became evident. Well, and then should also mention that you got a nice placement. I know, you know, short field, and nobody was too keen on facing break even on Sunday in the Jersey Girl, but Sue's Fortune. I don't know if Junior was riding, you know, for a placement here, but that was a very good effort.
Yeah, I was really thrilled with that race. Another filly that's been sensational so far early on in her career. And, you know, I didn't say anything to Junior about the race because I didn't want to get in his way, as far as he knows her so well. You know, I kind of talked him out of, on Saturday, he rode a horse, Mo Gotcha, and he kind of felt if he would have been a little bit more aggressive early on, he could have been successful in winning that race. But I didn't say anything to Junior, and I actually thought that he did the perfect thing with her that day. You know, there wasn't, she's going to go fast by herself. There wasn't a whole lot of, I mean, like you said, it was a small field. There wasn't anything in there to really press her, but the way she closed, I think, again, it just solidifies her and where she is on her 3-year-old year. You know, you always have doubts as, you know, people are going to knock her Adirondack, you know, 119 and change. But I thought she ran against a pretty decent field, and it was a double back rake racetrack where, you know, the times for right about that time of the day when they were treating the track like that was very slow. So it's just nice to have her show everybody who we think she is. And Junior's got such a good rapport with her that, you know, hopefully she continues to progress and run along the same level she's doing right now.
Let's also get a couple of updates on recent successes. And going back to, you know, the quiet week after Preakness, back to the New York Showcase, and Pat on the Back, who is just such a fun horse to have around and is so game. What do you see for him for the summer?
You know, I think our next shot, our next race, as we're looking at, is the John Nehru to go back against Open Company, going 7/8 at Belmont. Give him one more start at Belmont while he's, you know, that's just one of his, that's his probably his favorite track to run over. So that's kind of what we're going to point for there, and then kind of let the after that race kind of see map out a plan what we want to do after he runs there.
Well, and speaking of Harold Lerner, how about that bank examiner that broke through and got the maiden out of the way?
Yeah, she's a filly that last year we kind of thought she was head of the class as far as some of the two-year-olds go. I started her on the grass, thought she would be more, thought she had just more turf action, but that wasn't necessarily the case. I think she was injured after that first race. We took a small chip out of an ankle and down at Patty Hogan's, and she came back. She's been training really well since then. I was ultra confident in her first race and was kind of disappointed after her, you know, losing to, I think it was Newly Minted, Linda's filly. But then after watching what Newly Minted's done, I kind of, you know, realized, well, that's who I thought she was. You know, she's come back to win Breaker Maiden, you know, since then. And, you know, I just think she's a filly that with the right planning this summer, she might make a little noise in some New York Red Stakes.
Excellent. And speaking of, you know, stake horses that, you know, have been acquitting themselves okay. You know, you got a few kicking around like Hoffenheim. I mentioned Avinu Malkano before, but on a maiden front, another one that got the diploma, and some people may have kind of lost this in the Derby crush, but what about that Hot Diggity, the Frost Giant, New York bred?
Yeah, he ran really well in this year in breaking his maiden. He was working well, you know, coming up to that race. We're gonna point him towards the Ontario County up at Finger Lakes, give him a shot of getting some smaller black type and kind of build a plan for him as Saratoga approaches and Belmont Fall.
Very nice. And I don't want to end on a negative, but 40 under, that it almost looked like something went amiss at Penn National 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we've been battling a throat with him a little bit for this. Well, it was actually more towards the start of Florida. And we scoped him after a couple works and, you know, just had some asymmetry there. After the race at Aqueduct, we scoped him again and had a little bit more of a, you know, paralysis in his left arytenoid. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he ran so well, and it didn't seem to bother him that we continued on, and he was working well. He was showing every signs of being the horse that we thought he was going to be from last year. We scoped him after the Penn Mile, and he was 4 out of 5 with mucus. And I asked Manny if you know, he heard him making a noise or anything. He's like, no, he sounded great. Everything was, you know, so I'm not so certain that, you know, it wasn't just a combination of being sick and having the throat issue. I went ahead and sent him down to Patty Hogan's to have the tie back done there. And hopefully we'll, you know, make a race by the end of Saratoga or right around there and get him back to where he was. I still feel like he's going to be just fine and get back to some of those races that he ran, you know, as a two-year-old. So, you know, not how you want to spend, you know, not what we had in plan for him, but you have to make do and try to bring him back the best you can.
Well, and Dr. Ducharme is going to join us as early as this week. He did one for us on Kid Chocolate and the tie back, and we're gonna explain you know, the differences between that and, you know, for those that, you know, that going back to Omaha Beach and you know, his having to pass the Derby and the procedure and you know, entrapment, you know, people are hearing these terms and are curious about the different kinds of issues when it comes to breathing. So we're going to visit with Norma
on that topic as well.
Well, Maya, really looking forward to a summer that actually, it's going to play right into your wheelhouse, because with Mondays and Tuesdays off, you can you can bop back and forth to Farmington, and you're going to be a little bit more relaxed up here this summer.
Yeah, well, we're moving up to Saratoga now, so I just get a couple more days at the house in Schuylerville. So for me, I think it'll be great for everyone. You know, everyone's going to be able to enjoy a couple days in Saratoga. It's going to be great for the businesses and you know the people that work with the horses. Not that they have the mornings off, but they don't have to worry about the hustle and bustle of all day for 6 days a week. They get an extra afternoon off. So hopefully, it works out well for everybody.
Now, certainly a good Belmont Festival, and also, you know, the operation, whether it's at Upstate or whether it's in the Mid-Atlantic, things going great for the Engelhardt Barn. And, Maya, I appreciate it, and see you soon. Talk soon.
All right, Steve. Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Maya Engelhardt with an update on a lot of the nice, whether they're state breds or whether they're open company. And how about Ontario breds? You know, when we talked to Neil Howard back, must have been February, and it just so happened that the Desert Ride came up at that time. And the fact that the Samson homebred was just that. When you hear Samson, you think Canada. And sure enough, as Neil had indicated, the Woodbine Oaks. And, you know, you got a target on the calendar, Neil. You circle the date. You work toward it. And then things work out absolutely perfectly. Congratulations on the Woodbine Oaks win.
Happens every time like that.
Yes, exactly. It's that easy.
Right. Yeah. How you doing?
I'm great. This, you know, it's funny. I was, you know, we were busy in the obviously Belmont day, and right. I think it was must have been after Vicky Foley won the Woody Stevens. About 10 minutes later, John Nichols sent me a text. He said, Neil Howard won the Woodbine Oaks. And yeah. I was delighted immediately. And, and I knew right away that it was going to be this filly, and you saw the potential, you know, back at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I mean, she, everything, you know, her first start, and she had gone right on from that, came back the second time and was second, but that was okay. First time against winners, had a little bit of a wide trip, but ran well, and then really ran well at Keeneland, so... you know, you were seeing the things you wanted to see. So everything went well with her, and as we were just joking around, it doesn't always go that way, but everything is gone really smooth with her training and with her physically and mentally. You know, she hasn't had a bad day, fortunately. So.
I guess the one question, you know, after those races at Fairgrounds to start the career, and we talked in somewhere between the two starts, because you had a couple of horses that, you know, that were flashing real potential. But the one question you had to answer, you know, even though she had obviously shown the ability on grass, this was going to be the synthetic at Woodbine. And,
right.
You know, it's been a while since it was taken out of Keeneland. I'm not sure when, you know, your last previous synthetic starter, probably maybe something at Turfway or who knows, Arlington.
Yeah.
But were you confident that she would get over the Tapita?
I was confident that she would give 100%, and then, but I really forced myself to take a wait and see approach on how she was going to really get over the poly track, you know, the synthetic in a race situation. I really, because even though I know that I think the consensus is that it does mimic turf to a point, you know, I really went in it with a very open, really wait and see approach. To tell you the truth, I didn't know what to expect. But, you know, fortunately, she handled it. It didn't seem to faze her a bit, as it turned out.
No, and you know she, the way in which Steve Ballmer rode her, it was almost as if you know he could tell early on that you know that she was comfortable and that he had horse and that he could move you know whenever he wanted. What did you tell him going in and talk about the way the race unfolded as you watched?
Yeah, well, we talked about it fairly at length. You know, it's not good to kind of overthink anything too much. I guess we all do it sometimes. And I just said, you know, if you can, her best tool is the last 3/16 of a mile of a race. I said, but if you could save as much ground as you could, because she does like to settle in sometimes maybe a little too much. And he told me, and he watched her races, and he seemed to be pretty well versed. He's a veteran rider, very nice rider, and a real student. As it turned out, I hadn't known Steve before this occasion. So he kind of pretty much knew what we were talking about, and she's a nice filly. You know, which helps everything, you know.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah.
Candy ride and out of the distorted humor, fun in the desert. She's a homebred for Samson, and you know, one of the great families in the business, not just in Canada but throughout North America. And you know, you got to be thrilled to get deliver them a win like this.
Oh yeah, I mean, these people are, and you know, I've been very fortunate to be around these. You know, other owners, you know, people like the Samson people, you know, obviously not the least of which is, you know, Mr. Farish, i.e. Lane's End in general, but they love every minute of it. They're very passionate about all their horses, and they have an unbelievable understanding of what goes into getting one to a maiden race, much less a race like this. So that helps everybody.
Well, the question that immediately comes to the fore, Neil, unlike the Kentucky Oaks, winning the Kentucky Oaks, I mean, you don't have the option of winning the big 3-year-old race in the country, our Derby, but it does seem that every Woodbine Oaks winner has got to take a serious look at the Queen's Plate. Where are you on that?
Yeah, we obviously all of the above what you just said, and we are taking a look at it. And you know, we're going to obviously take, you know, really try to scrutinize it as much as you can. But you know, for us, in this instance, you know, the timing is the only negative here for us. But having said that, on the flip side, she's had 2 months between her last two races. So if we do decide to do this and we have to make a quick turnaround, this is probably the time to do it, because she's had good spacing between her races. And by design, because she's a young filly, and they're very close to what they do with their fillies. They're very careful about their fillies, because they do like Lane's End, you know, where you're looking for broodmares, so you want to be extremely careful going along the way. And they've given me they've indulged me completely to take my time with her and let her be what she can be, I guess, for lack of a better term. But this is, the timing is the only thing that's getting in our way right now. But it's definitely something that we are considering it.
Well, when you think Samson, obviously they've won the Queen's Plate with a couple of pretty prominent fillies in history and in Canadian racing history when you think Dance Through the Dawn and Dance Smartly. So they're certainly not afraid of running a good filly of theirs against the boys. And, you know, I think about conversation. I think about the Samuels and, you know, Tammy, we had Tammy years ago, before she got sick and passed. And, they're just a wonderful, just wonderful people. And you can't, you know, when Samson wins, you just,
they're amazing. I mean, like I said, I've been fortunate enough to become a small part of that team on a seasonal basis, you know, just basically like to send a few to Florida and a few to Faglands in the winter. So it's been nice for me on a seasonal basis. So believe me, they did not have to leave this filly with me. They have two very fine trainers in Canada, and Malcolm Pierce and Gail Cox. Those are their main trainers, and they're just really, really wonderful people. I'm very fortunate.
Well, we'll wait and look toward the Queen's Plate. See about Desert Ride and her participation. I'm sure Steve Behan would be thrilled, Neil, to go forward with you and with the filly.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we'll kind of watch her real close and see how it's going to come up, because you know it's going to be the Queen's Plate. You know, and that says enough, right? That's all you got to know. It's going to be a good race, and you're going to have the best 3-year-olds in Canada in there. And so we're going to have to really be tied on, you know, so to speak.
Well, it'd be nice for you for a chance to win a Queen's Plate. Add that to your resume.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's just, you know me. I'll be looking forward to winning the fourth race tomorrow. I'd be happy.
Well, and on that, I love it. On that topic, well, how about the seventh race on Thursday instead? The Crosswalk, the City Zip Colt, coming up on Thursday.
He's doing well. Had a nice, he had a nice vacation. Now he's in main track only in that race. See that? So I don't know if you noticed that or not. But if it doesn't rain and come off, you know, we won't run, but hopefully there's a race a week later for him. But he's trained extremely well for his return.
Nice. Well, Neil, I was just so excited for you for Samson, and we'll watch and we'll see. I haven't talked to Tina about going up to Toronto for the plate. I may spring that on her, and so we may, you know, head up there. I've never been to one, so it'd be a good thing to be. This might be a perfect chance, and it really feels like, you know, there isn't some heavy head that, you know, that would scare you off. So feels like it might be a great opportunity. Well done, Neil. Congratulations.
Thank you so much, Steve. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Always fun to talk to Neil Howard, and look for Crosswalk either Thursday. I know there is some lousy weather headed toward the east. We're in the turf race, too, on Thursday, and I think there's a real chance that we get rain in New York as well. But this is a pretty nice, fairish homebred Crosswalk. We're going to stay right here, as I told you this morning, and thank Neil and earlier Jeremiah Engelhart. Later, we'll talk to Vicki Foley in hour three. Right now, Andy Serling is going to join us next, and Ray, dial up Andy and get him in here. Jay Pribman as well to follow. Jay getting ready for, you know, a couple of weeks off after the long slog through the Triple Crown season. So we'll get Jay's classic trail recapping and, you know, Andy here next, as soon as Ray brings him forward. It's so easy to root. Neil Howard, one of my favorites, and has been for a long time. And then you combine that with combine that with the Samuels and the Belaz family, and pretty good story. And you know, this Philly, it's funny because this was the Philly that, you know, we reached out to Neil about. I think it was after the maiden win, or in advance of that second start, maybe when we were there for, you know, headed for Risen Star. And boy, what a winter. It just popped in my head, actually mentioning that. What a winter it was for the Fairgrounds horses. Because here's another one winning a big race. In addition, obviously, to War Will and Serengeti Empress. Both of those horses participated Saturday in the big day that wrapped up the racing festival. Andy Serling presided over it all. And Andy, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
Good, good, good. Still, you know, the afterglow.
Well, I just see you. I see you already putting in your doing a little sucking up to get invited back to Fairgrounds next winter. So you covered that already. You replay that. You send like a copy of that to the people at Fairgrounds.
I should. Sure. That's a good idea. That's a good idea. And also, I was just fishing with Neil Howard for an invite to the Queen's Plate.
Why is Neil up with the Queen's Plate? You haven't traveled enough, by the way.
Yeah, I have. But he won the Woodbine Oaks on Saturday.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Can't believe I missed it and all the excitement.
Well, it's funny you say that because the first thing that brought it to my attention was John Nichols. And John and I were texting back and forth after a couple of races in New York. And he said, I hadn't realized. He said, I just saw that Neil won the Woodbine Oak. So they'll probably spin into the Queen's Plate, which I can completely understand. So.
Because the winner usually goes there.
Yeah, and they've got a great record. That was actually the Woodbine Oaks was really the one of the few negatives we talked about with Mark Cassie yesterday. Mark ran a handful in there and did not fare well, but he was okay with the results from Saturday overall.
As he should be.
Well, I don't know if we should start from Thursday, Andy, and work our way through to the Brooklyn, or if we should start with the feature and dance around. But, you know, overall, I guess,
start with Belmont Stakes, but, you know, you're the boss, Steve.
All right. Well, then, let's do that. Let's start with Belmont. And by the time we reached Belmont, what was your thoughts? And I don't think I ever saw your – I didn't get a chance to watch your video, so I don't know what your final assessment was. I know Tacitus
– I thought that Tacitus couldn't lose unless there was a major incident. There was a relatively major incident, and he lost. But he was way clearly the best horse. I mean, I don't want to take away from Sir Winston. He's a really nice horse, and he's improving, and I'm always happy to see Mark do well. And obviously, he had a sensational Triple Crown. And, you know, it came out, you know, you think about the Derby, and I mean, not that anybody sort of, I think, sane is suggesting that Will would have won if he hadn't been fouled. It's just he never got his fair chance to show what he could do and came back the Preakness to show what he could do. And then, listen, he wasn't winning the Belmont, but he got a lousy trip, too. I mean, just sort of chasing around the four path was a recipe for disaster. And I think, in fact, if you look at War of Will, I think it really shows just how well Tacitus ran. And the Tacitus had a wider trip, covered more ground than him, and still almost won the race. And you know, and on a fair racetrack at Belmont, Tacitus would have won quite easily. And even if Sir Winston hadn't gotten sort of the ride of the, you know, the best ride in the Triple Crown races since Joel Rosario finished fifth in Practical Joke, he still would have won, which is pretty miraculous. But, you know, Joel did everything right. I mean, I think one of the themes of Saturday was kind of who's paying attention and who isn't when you have a track that, was the rail was the place to be on Thursday. It was dramatically the place to be on Friday. It was even more dramatically the place to be on Saturday. In essence, you had to spend some time on the rail in almost every instance, save the Woody Stevens, which we could talk about in a bit, to have really any fair chance Mottoli never was on the rail. He wasn't the two pack. I think that's, you know, sort of lost on the herd of people that can't get out of their own way, trying to, you know, complain about McKenzie and some sort of fictional bad ride by Mike Smith, but which he gave, it was a good ride, very good ride, as a matter of fact. But Joelle did everything right with Sir Winston. He got right to Vance. You know, I think you could compare Joelle's ride on Sir Winston to his ride on Good Samaritan 2 years ago in Jim Dandy, another day where the rail was so the place to be, right? And he got him right to the fence, and he stayed there until he hit the top of the stretch. And sometimes people get confused, and they say, oh, this was closed outside. How could have been a gold rail? Well, it's not necessarily – it's about how much time they spend on the rail, right? I think that if you look back at the Jim Dandy, the only horse who covered less ground was Always Dreaming, who had the rail and was on the lead, on the rail the whole way. I think he covered six less feet than Good Samaritan that day. And if you look at the ride that he gave on the winner, Sir Winston, he got right to the rail and he didn't get off until around the 3/16 pole, or maybe even past it. And that made all the difference. And it was just a sensational ride. I mean, look who finished third, right? A horse that it's hard to sort of place him in the same class as the horse he was running against, but Jovia never left the rail. And for Tastis to have done what he did, and not just because of ground loss, but because of the way the track was playing, nothing short of remarkable. So Sir Winston won, but Tastis, I think to most people, gained in defeat. But horse racing is not always about the best horse. It's about the horse sometimes who gets the best trip, the best ride, the best circumstance. And that's what Sir Winston did. I give a lot of credit, you know. I mean, he's an improved horse. It's clearly an improved horse. It's not that he ran badly, but he got very much the right trip and Tastis got the wrong one. And I think that's really the story of Belmont. I think one of the stories, obviously, you know, was how the races played out. But it was a fantastic day of racing. And I find horse racing very interesting for so many reasons. And one of them is sort of analyzing and taking races apart and trying to come up with a rational approach to why horses won, why other horses lost.
Absolutely. And Rosario, go back, to Friday as well, with Catalina Cruiser, where at the 16th pole, I thought, he's never getting there. And the next thing you know,
he was on the right horse. Joel didn't do anything wrong in that race, and he stayed towards the inside for much of the race, but he's a good horse. He's a very good horse.
We talked
to John Sadler. Answer the question. He can ship and win. So there's that.
Well, he's been doing that. I mean, obviously.
No, I know. He's shipping a lot. You know, he's shipping. I see he's got horses entered in Saturday at Churchill. Right. He's playing on running gift box, among others.
Yep.
Anyhow, so that's really my take on the Belmont. You know, in the Belmont's a race that's a fun race, and we'll see what implications it has going forward. And it's a fun division at this time because there's a lot of horses out there that. There's no, you know, clear leader of the division. I would say that War Will is kind of the leader right now in a funny way, but I think it's very open. And we'll see what happens in the second half. You know, you've got the Haskell, the Jim Dandy, and the Travers. And Mott's suggesting that he's going to run both his horses, Country House and Tassett, I think, of the Jim Dandy and Travers, which wouldn't surprise me. And
Mark, too? Cassie, too? Both horses pointing in that direction.
Mark dances all the dances, you know?
Yeah.
One of the reasons we like him, besides the fact that he's a good guy. But, you know, Mark shows up. He doesn't make excuses, and he doesn't complain, and he shows up.
Well, I'll tell you who else shows up as we work our way backwards. This Bricks and Mortar is so spectacular. It's so much fun. Let me answer it. Finish this line. Bricks and Mortar is the best turf horse in America of this ilk since?
I don't know, probably Flintshire. I mean, the way he was, you know, I mean, when he was over here that year, it's hard, you know, I'd have to look it up. Why, who are you thinking of?
Nobody in particular. I'm taken by everything that's gone right for him after, you know, the time off and...
after everything going wrong for him.
Exactly.
I'm not big on these polls. And I don't vote in them, so people can vote whoever they want, and I don't have a problem with the idea that Mottoli is the top horse. But Mottoli has one grade one win, and Bricks and Mortar has three. I could surprise that he doesn't, right? He's not leading that poll, right? It's Mottoli.
He's getting plenty of support, though. A lot of people have him.
He's won three grade ones. He's won three grade ones this year. How many horses do you think are going to win three grade ones this year?
No, I... It, it's impressive.
And it's only early June. Yeah, he's such a cool horse. I mean, I remember when he lost in Saratoga for the first time to Saranac. I think that's just about, you know, sort of the mental end of the meet for me. And, I mean, if you look at him, it's amazing that a horse is sort of a closer like him. He's gotten much more tractable than he used to be. Could be undefeated.
Yes, he could. Yes, he could.
Difficult start in unusual circumstances of the Saranac. And then the a lousy trip in the I think it was the
Hill Prince.
The Hill Prince, yeah. And then getting hurt. He's just been spectacular. He's just, you know, it's funny, he covered more ground than anybody else in the race too. If you look at track, it's not significant. 42 feet more than Robert Bruce. There's just some insane comments that Robert Bruce would have beaten him if he hadn't been, you know, he hadn't sort of blind switched him. That's just silly. He was never beating him at any point. He was the second best horse. They got a very good ride, actually, by Irad, Robert Bruce. Not Irad. Who rode him?
Robert Bruce was Jose.
Jose, right, okay. Because Irad was the winner, obviously. Yeah, no, that was great. I love Bricks, and I was obviously glad to see him win. That was fun. And Chad ran 1-2-3 in there. You know, when's the last time you saw a trainer do that in America? Charlie Whittingham and the San Juan Capistrano. He ran 1-2-3-4-5 in there once. I think he did.
Yeah, that's right.
Could be wrong, but I feel like...
No, I think you're right. You're absolutely right. There's one thing I discussed. Surprised that it didn't get a little traction yesterday. Nick Luck was on with us, and as he wades back into action. And... Bricks and Mortar came up, and with Chad's comment, Andy, that, you know, he's not keen on pointing for a mile and a half Breeders' Cup. The topic of the Champion Stake in October at a mile and a quarter.
I'm glad Nick's doing well, but he's not going for running the Champion Stake in October.
Well, what's he going to do in October?
You know what? Maybe he can ask him like they asked. Like they asked about what's her name? Newspaper.
Record. Yeah.
Hasn't won since asking the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I'd be pretty surprised if Rick shipped overseas, but I'll inquire.
It would be a good test.
An odd situation because after the Arlington Million, you know, I mean,
yeah.
It's hard, right? Is it Joe Hirsch mile 3/8 or mile and a half?
Mile and three sounds right. 11 furlongs sounds right.
I mean, I guess it becomes a question of whether or not they want to try that. Because other than that, they really don't have a lot of options.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's an interesting question of where they would run. I highly doubt he's going over to Europe, though. But
he's a horse that's...
If he does, I'll go with him.
Well, he's adjusted to all ground, and he is very, really fun to watch. It's become one of my favorite turf horses in recent memory.
It's a miracle he came back. I mean, even I even remember, I mean, you know, obviously it's a horse that I've had an affinity for a long time, and I remember when Chad finally told me that he'd gotten it back, and even he said, you know, we're still hoping he can get back, you know, he can get back and race. And, you know, he was very quick to praise everybody at Stone Street and all the work they did with him and getting him back. And you know, a horse who went through, as he said, a very tricky operation to get back. And it's miraculous. And it shows, you know, if obviously hard work by people who are very skilled, but also patience and the, you know, ability to have connections that are, you know, always ready to do the right thing. And always ready, you know, to wait as long as they have to, and hope for a good result. So it worked
out. Exactly. Let's talk about the Met, and we were looking for a heavyweight battle, and we got it.
Yeah. It was a great race. It was really exciting going in, and it was thrilling watching. And Mottoli's just a wonderful horse, and I think he's had a lot of fans since last winter, and I think like a lot of people, I was really so disappointed when he came out of the Chick Lang with an injury last year and wasn't able to run again, because you saw even early last year that he could have been the best sprinter in the country, And to do what he's done this year, it's just been fabulous. And Steve Asmussen and the connections have, you know, done everything right with him, right? They recognized what they had to do with him, which was to try to win the Met Mile. And they got him there with stretching him out at Churchill. And, you know, when you look, to me, I think it's a very interesting example, the race, of how many people focus in on one thing in a race, and they think that's the only thing that matters. And they don't really understand the trip handicapping is so much about everything that happened in a race. And Mattioli chased in the two path on a very rapid pace. Now, I don't think a lot of us thought Colefront was going to win the race, but Colefront came in there with pretty strong credentials. He was the one on the inside of the rail, the best part of the track. He finished well up the track. And Mattioli survived the pace, chasing outside, and still won. To me, it would have taken some sort of really remarkable performance by a horse behind him to say, yeah, but he should have lost. And Mike Smith did everything right on McKenzie. Okay, he went right the rail, he saved ground, he stayed on the rail as long as possible, and he also understood that he couldn't swing the far outside in the stretch and expect to necessarily get the kind of ground that would have enabled him to make his run. And one of the reasons he was able to continue to run the stretch is he was closer to the inside. It's not his fault that Christophe Soumillon, unlike some people who basically ride here year in and year out, knew right away to get right to the rail with Thunder Snow, and it's almost as though every time Mike tried to make a move, Thunder Snow was blocking him in front of him. And it wasn't a bad ride by Mike Smith. It was a somewhat unlucky ride, but it was somewhat forced by circumstance that he had to do what he did. And is it possible that if everything had worked out perfectly for McKenzie, that he would have gotten by Mattioli? Absolutely. However, let's say that happened and he beat Mattioli by a half length or something, or even a length. I don't think it would have been unreasonable to have said that Mattioli ran the better race. So there's all this hullabaloo that Mike gave a bad ride. Not true. And, you know, much like the Jose Ortiz criticism in Tacitus, I don't really criticize Jose. He got a bad post with a horse, and Mott was sort of clear with this, who doesn't like to, you know, wants to be kind of clear. And, you know, could Jose have gotten him in a little bit more at some point? Perhaps. But it's more a circumstance that created a difficult situation. And I don't think that Mike did anything wrong. And I think that frankly, McKenzie was the second best horse in the Met Mile, even though there's a circumstance where he could have won. But it's not like, you know, the race got a 108 buyer. It's not like McKenzie has a big resume of 112 buyers, you know? So let's take a step back and you know, there's all these people that are just saying, oh, but I know McKenzie was favored, so a lot more people bet him, so they're influenced by that. But to me, they both ran very well, and Mattioli ran the better race, and he won the race. And they're both terrific horses, and I hope they get a chance to meet somewhere again down the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a question of it doesn't have to be labeled a bad ride.
It's always a bad ride, right? It's not always a bad ride. And tracks like that are very tricky for jockeys, you know? The ones that are aware of it, they can't, just because you know the rail is good doesn't mean that you can be on it every second, you know? Or it's very tricky.
Well, there is a point off the turn where he has the option of waiting a few more beats to go ultimately what would have been a seam that opens between Promises Fulfilled and
Understood
and Fire and Firenze Fire.
You know that afterwards, right? I mean,
right.
Nice.
I know. Listen,
split second decisions at 35 to 40.
Exactly.
Miles an hour.
Exactly. And you can.
And I thought Mike did an awful lot of good things.
Staying where he was fine, and it wasn't a question of people saying, "Oh, being hemmed in," and this. And that, no, that was fine. He had a choice, and he went inside, and then ended up having Thunder Snow kind of back up into him, and that didn't help. But
backed up into him. He more just sort of was a blocker. It's not like Thunder Snow was going backwards. He just wasn't going forward enough, and he was in front of him.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like
that's fine.
Backed up. I mean, what did he get? Beat a length and a half? Fabulous ride by Christophe Soumillon. I bet him and thought he was going to win, and that was a great ride. I mean, not only did he get him on the inside, but he had him close. I mean, I think Thunder Snow was a lot closer than most of us expected him to be. No, listen, those were three really good horses that hit the wire.
Yeah, it is. It was fun.
I think
a lot of
result,
fun.
They were the horses that probably were the three best.
A lot
it was
of
a good
fun.
Race, and it came out a good race.
Well, and right before
Woody,
that. Yeah, go ahead. The Woody, go ahead.
The Woody is a classic example of a situation that can occur when you have a track that has a perceived bias. And it becomes, you know, it's, I used to, because it would happen in the inner sometimes, you know, so like a two-turn race where you'd have an extremely strong rail. And it's almost like every horse is trying to thread through the eye of the needle, right? Every horse wants to get the rail. So what happens is you get horses, not only do you get a fast pace, but you get a situation where horses that shouldn't be forwardly placed or as forwardly placed are aggressively ridden. And so even though one of them gets the rail, like Strike Silver, they're not going to win. You know, the rail can't magically carry everybody home, right? You know, especially when paces are quick in these races. So what happens is you get a meltdown scenario and people say, look, that race will says there wasn't a gold rail. And I understand that kind of thinking. And I'm not, listen, and these things are all opinions and people have their opinions. But, you know, the data will back up that you had to be on a rail in almost every race, certain point in time, to be somewhat successful. And like, you know, for instance, look at the ride that what's his name got the runner up, Nitrous. He was on the rail for what, 4.5, 5 furlongs of the 7 furlong race. So he got a sensational ride. Was that Ricardo Santana?
Yeah.
I mean, so he was on the rail. The winner was not. The winner was basically in the three path the entire way and angled out. The winner really ran. And which exemplifies something we said before the race, which was why was Mr. Money and why is he running in the Matt Wynn, a grade three for 150,000 when he probably would have won the Woody Stevens. But that's a decision that, you know, they're going to have to just whatever. So the winner, that was one horse that really did run against the track. But I think that race itself, just the way it was run and the horses that were involved and, you know, obviously Complexity didn't run. And Honest Answer, Honest Mischief probably ran the best race when you look at it because he didn't break well and he ended up making a wide early move in there into the teeth of the pace. So he may have run the best race, but that race was really a function of a race being run in a somewhat goofy manner, right? A very unpredictable manner. And that'll happen when you have tracks like that. Because people are thinking, I'm going to have to do something to give myself the best chance to win. And one person doesn't think it, four do, right?
Yeah.
You know, as you said to me, you couldn't predict that Jeremiah's horse would be so forward in that race, right?
Well, I just talked to Maya, too. And in fact, I talked to both of the people that made those fateful decisions. Strike Silver.
New tie. Right. No, right. So it's just, you know, it was hard. I mean, it's hard to that Doug O'Neill's horse wasn't on the lead because Doug O'Neill's horse feels like he's a rocket ship, right? That the five horse, the horse who ran second to Nitrous. And the
Landeskog. Landeskog.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No. Interesting race and one to take apart. I haven't looked at the head on the stretch. I know there's a lot of talk about come down. I defer to Richie, who said to me that he thought, yes, he did foul him, and probably Corey should get some days, but the other horse was clearly backing up and nobody. And I, you know, I know that every DQ is, you know, should have come down or came down was the worst call of all time, didn't come down, the worst call of all time, comparing it to the maximum security. I don't see any comparison to maximum security at all, but I should watch it again, I guess. But whatever.
Well, I can tell you, Vicki Foley is going to be with us at 11, and I talked to her this morning, and I asked her, you know, point blank, did you know, what were you thinking? I was standing right behind them down by the scale, and I described
what'd
them
you
as
like?
Pensive. I'm.
What'd you like?
I'll tell you what. I had a very
days?
New the other way around. I've had another terrible run here of.
Well, listen, it's just another
triple crown.
Reason that Tina should probably leave you anyway. So.
Yeah, I managed to gain another about 7 pounds this Triple Crown season. So I'll be on the skim milk wagon, I guess. But she said point blank, Andy, that she thought she was coming down.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll watch it. I think we all are fatalists in those situations. I wasn't involved. So it didn't really matter anyway.
Well, Johnny did say when asked that he told the stewards that he was out of horse, so that it didn't affect him, which was.
Yeah, well, he was outside chasing, right? You know, so worked against him, and mind control gets a pass from me. He's run too many good races to just criticize him off one.
Well, which brings up the question, by the way, why you take the blinkers off when your horse you know, is going well with him. I'm
not a trainer, so.
There you go. All right, Guarana, quick hit of the two dominant performances, Guarana and World of Trouble, back-to-back in the Acorn and Jaipur.
Guarana may be a force that the entire division is going to be fearing going forward. I mean, Chad Brown already has Dunbar Road for these races in Saratoga, and now he has this horse, and, you know, some might think that she's a sprinter type. I don't know. Her second name is Pleasant Home. Nick pointed out on Twitter, and I remember I said to Chad, actually, after she broke her maiden, I said, you know, her second day, she's a Phipps, you know, she's got that Phipps pedigree. Her second day is Pleasant Home. So she's got plenty of stamina in her pedigree, a big, strong horse. I mean, obviously, she got the right trip. She was on the inside the whole way. I thought Tom's horse, even for being on the rail, ran very well. I'm not sure. I like Cookie Dough, and I never imagined that she would gun after Serengeti for Empress like she did. I thought she might be less speed crazy. She was not. So Guarana got a very good trip and a very good ride. This was one where Jose, you know, got right the fence and stayed behind, but she was dominant. She's obviously very, very talented to have done that in two races. So wherever she should go, she's going to be a force to be reckoned with. And as far as World of Trouble, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Mike Dubb on Sunday. That's with Dave Grenning. We were speaking to him a little bit about him. And, you know, you have to make these decisions. You know, I was sort of teasing him and said, I know you won the race. I had to run him in the bet. But, you know, we were laughing at it. I said, I'm not saying he would have won. But, you know, it's interesting. You know, he's a grade one winner now in dirt and turf. And I think you have to take a serious, you know, look towards the Vanderbilt, even if Mottoli's going to be in there. Right, because this is a horse that should be racing in grade one race. What are you going to race him in the Troy at 5.5 furlongs? You could win it. It's money and stuff. It matters. But this is a horse that's establishing himself as a stallion. And, you know, another grade one win in a dirt race could only make him more valuable. So he's a very cool horse. Now, to be fair, and he's best in there, he also got away with a ridiculously slow first quarter. I mean, almost 22 on that turf course in a major turf sprint is literally like going, you know, like 24 in a dirt race. I mean, they went, you know, New York Breds were, you know, the feature. Look at the feature on Sunday. They went 21-1. So that was not a fast pace. And even I read Jason Service saying it, whoever wrote it for DRF, saying something like, I saw that first quarter and I knew that, you know, basically we weren't losing, you know, once you run that kind of for slow first quarter with a horse like that. But he's a very, very good horse. You know, I felt that for a while.
Absolutely. Rushing Fall with the win.
I thought she was vulnerable, and I know she was able to cut it out and slow pace up front, and I think Beau Recall ran very well to be second there. She was very impressive, and it's interesting with you know, three-year-old fillies have very few options on the turf at a mile, next to none, and you have to sort of manicure their campaign, which I think is that the right word, or you know, for their three-year-olds, and I think look forward to their four-year-old years. And I think that's a lot of what Chad Brown did with her last year. And it's why we didn't see her that often. And, you know, the only thing you can sort of do is run the matriarch at the end of the year, which Daddy's Legend did, and ran that good second to Uni. And then it's, you know, as four-year-olds, you've got races like this race, obviously. Then you've got the First Lady at Keeneland, and you've got the Matriarch. So you have three grade ones at a mile, and those are the races you point for, and you figure out in between. And now I think they have to decide. I know somebody told me that they were talking, and this was not Chad. I discussed it with Chad, talking four-star Dave, maybe a Saratoga with her. And I don't blame them for looking, at least thinking about it, because the other option is to run into Diana. I think they could do both, really, because Diana's, isn't it the first weekend now? I think it might be a move to the first weekend, so you've got more time between that, because now that would put it exactly a month, 4 weeks before the Arlington, which is the 11th or something, whenever that is, the first, second weekend in August. Anyway, so I don't know. They have to figure out what to do with her, you know. Would they take a shot against the boys? Because obviously the First Lady at Keeneland is the next big goal. And after that, they consider trying the boys, you know, in the Breeders' Cup. We left out, what's her name? Midnight Visu.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, she's just terrific. I thought Come Dancing would be very tough to beat, but, you know, as we were talking about before the race, I said, you know, you have to be careful about just assuming Come Dancing is the inside speed. You know, and she's been running these big figures, and she's been faster than Midnight Visu. Horses like Midnight Visu don't go down easily. They just don't. You know, they show up every time. She's gotten better and better, and Come Dancing did not show up. She did not run well. That was not a good effort by her. I mean, she barely held second with a ran the rail trip, but Midnight Visu was absolutely spectacular. She's just every bit the huge divisional leader. And, you know, you kind of hope. I mean, obviously, second half of the season, a lot can happen. You know, Late could get back on track. It's running this weekend. I'm thrilled that Red Ruby is running the Fleur-de-Lis, because really felt like she could have been the one horse that really could have beaten maybe Montemoy Girl last year, and love to see what she's going to do going forward. But right now, I mean, you got a horse in Midnight Bisou that's an impressive winner. She's 4-for-4. She's won both the Apple Blossom and the Ogden Phipps. And, you know, there's sort of three more grade ones, right? There's, you know, is Delaware Handicap still a grade one, or is it grade two now?
I think it got trimmed to grade two.
Yeah, so you've got the Versatile Ensign. You know, you've got the Beldame Spinster. And you actually, the Beldame's a two now, right? The Beldame downgraded? Can't remember. And you've got the Breeders' Cup. So, you know, she's got a big jump on them. And the way she's running, they may come back, the others, but they're going to have to be able to run to beat her. And she had a very good trip. Mike stayed in the rail as long as possible, but she really ran. She's just a good horse.
Andy, a couple of other thoughts about Thursday and Friday, too. Was the slip in Homerique and significant
Homerique and Competition Ideas just put on a show. And, you know, I know that, you know, a lot of us, and listen, I love competition. I think that, you know, she has a chance to win a race against Homerique, but she didn't cover that much more ground than Homerique. According to Tracker, she only went 6 feet farther. I think the illusion was because, you know, even when I told this to Chad Brown, he said, really? And I said, well, you have to remember. And right away he said, oh, that's true. You know, you don't think of it. You're not, you know, once again, think of the whole race, right? She was three wide the first turn, Homerique. So she lost some ground the first turn. I thought she got an exceptional ride by Irad. And, you know, no knock on the ride that the competition got. But they're just both very, very good ideas, good horses. And they, I mean, they just, on paper, they look to be dominant over the field. And at the wire, they were dominant over the field. What else did we have? We had the... you know, they had the Tremont winner who I think took advantage of the rail, and Doug O'Neill was sort of an uncompetitive race when Maven didn't play. Separation of Powers. I mean, she rode the rail. And I think she's a good example of, you know, the value of the rail, right? Because they got her the front, and that's not really normally her running style anymore, and she got a 100 buyer. She's never really shown herself to be a 100 buyer horse. He was a second start off a layoff and a 4-year-old and couldn't move up. But I think that's a good example that the rail moved her up at least, you know, two or three legs. But she was an easy winner of that race, and it appears that she's sort of at least back, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
They head to Saratoga and figure out sort of how you get to the Ballerina. You know, I don't think you want to not run her for 2.5 months, especially at what race, the best race to run her. And Thursday, newspaper losing on Thursday. It's obviously very disappointing in the newspaper record. You know, the one horse we all thought was going to be a real star has been disappointing. She clearly has not moved forward. And it's not that she ran badly, but she should have won that race. Gambier Park has improved, and she's a nice horse, and she's moving in the right direction at the right time. And both she and Concrete Rose, I mean, they may be the horses to beat. Mile and Quarter, I know, you know, Chad Brown is, you know, trying to figure out if newspaper's a horse that he can get to sort of rate, you know, he talked about that going forward a little bit. They'll try the Mile and a Quarter, Bell and Oaks, but she's right now, she's gone from being the biggest star in that division to being a horse with a lot to prove. And once again, if she can't, maybe she's a horse that next year they would focus on those mile races next year, right? Figure out how to get her there. She's still a very good horse, but she has not looked like the same horse that we saw last year.
No. No, he'll work on it.
But that's racing, right? You know, that's,
yeah.
I mean, it's funny because, you know, you look at, for Carver Stables, right? You know, every stable wants to have that horse that shows up in every big race, and they're 3-5, right? Isn't that your dream as an owner, right? And, you know, newspaper record looked like she was going to be the horse that was going to give that to them. And it turns out they actually have one in the barn. It's just Bricks and Mortar, right? Who was 3-5 in Manhattan. Don't see a lot of horses that short in Manhattan. I think he paid less than Flincher did.
We can check. No, it was great, Andy. It was a terrific. It worked out perfectly. We had the best weather of the Triple Crown season, and the people turned out. Saturday
good
was
crowd,
perfect.
Good weather.
Yep, perfect crowd. Yeah. They bet their lungs too. You know, for anybody that's questioning the head count from Saturday, take the on track and divide it by the 57,000. It's 210 per person, which is about exactly what the typical number is.
Yeah, that was a... I would be happy to make fun of us if we bloated the number. We didn't. I think anyone who's there knows that it was really crowded. You know, it wasn't the 90,000, but almost a very big place. No, it was packed.
Yeah,
and that's
perfect.
The crowd we expected to get, somewhere in the mid-50s to 60, right? That's the reasonable crowd. And there's nothing wrong with that. That shows, I think, that a lot of people have come to Belmont and realized what a fun day it is. But I think for our fans, for racing fans, this was a great day of racing, right? Because it wasn't unbearably crowded. And people were there. I think the people there really appreciated that they were seeing, you know, a mid-year Breeders' Cup and a car. The Breeders' Cup's going to have to really, you know, have a good car to compare with this, because this was a really sensational day of racing. So, yeah, it was the crowd was legit, and they bet. It was the highest non-Triple Crown handle of all time. So
exactly.
That's
no, it was a pleasure.
It was all
and
good. Yeah.
A lot of fun.
It was nice
a lot
to
of fun.
A little bit.
Yes.
Not much.
Just enough.
I barely
right?
saw you. I barely saw you. Now I think about it.
Well, we saw you. We were at the draw, and
oh, right, that's right. That's
you know,
right.
And then the week, then the week becomes a blur for you,
man, I'm tied a lot to the studio, so it's sort of hard. But it was fun. Saw some friends, which is always nice. And now it's time for somebody else to battle on your show.
Jay Privman, in fact, Jay Privman.
Oh, well, Jay will have much to say. So goodbye.
Andy, enjoy Stars. We've got Stars and Stripes coming up, and then the shift to Saratoga. Thank you.
Bye.
Andy Serling, everybody, and the recap of your festival came off very well, really did. We'll get Jay Privman's impression, too. Jay's going to join us momentarily. Vicky Foley after that, looking forward to that conversation. And John White, too. We'll get John's take.